Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We're providing you news and commentary rooted in a commitment to individual liberty, personal responsibility, limited government, and the rule of law. Coming up, we're going to visit with John Miltimore, who is the editor-at-large at fee.org. Right now, we have with us Mark Shulman. Mark is the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's called HistoryCentral.com. Great for kids of all ages, including you and I. Again, HistoryCentral.com. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
So, for our listeners' benefit, you're located in Tel Aviv right now, which is just a, kind of the eye of the storm, if you will. Let's start off with a discussion of what's happening in Israel and the Middle East.
Absolutely, Bob. So when we look at what's going on here in Israel, you sort of have to look in multiple fronts and multiple directions, even though there's something that ties them all together. So first, when it comes to Gaza, Israeli troops have more or less completed the northern one-third plus of Gaza, have defeated whatever Hamas troops are there, and it's still in a cleanup situation because there's still tunnels they haven't found. There are tunnels everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles of tunnels, and finding them all and destroying them is one of the key purposes of the operation. Most of the effort is towards the town, city of Khan Yunis, which is in the southern part of Gaza, and where the expectation and thought is that the leadership of Hamas is located underground there, and also some percentage of the hostages. The Israeli army has not succeeded in releasing, except for the very beginning, one hostage. The rest they have not succeeded in releasing, other than by negotiations. And of course, that's a frustration, to say the very least.
Mm-hmm.
The general expectation is, let's put it this way, they're not all alive.
Right.
And there's a lot of question whether the women who they kept, they'll ever let go of those women they kept because of what they did to those women.
Right.
And so it's no one's willing to really say that, but that's really the general sense, is that the women that they didn't release in the end, the rest of the women with it, which they, when they were supposed to, and the reasoning is pretty much, actually, Secretary of State of the United States even said it about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, when it first happened, that they do not want these women to tell the stories of what Hamas did to them.
Yeah.
So that's where that stands. I'm going to come back to it in a second.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the north, last week Israel killed, or doesn't officially admit it, but it's true, one of the leaders of Hamas who was in Beirut, who was working out of Beirut,
mm-hmm.
and who was a friend of Nasrallah. Now, keep in mind the fact that Nasrallah is a Hezbollah movement in Lebanon that is a semi-proxy of Iran. When I say semi-proxy, they get all their money and all their arms from Iran. They're not 100% controlled by Iran. They're also a Lebanese party, and they care about what the Lebanese think of them and everything else, so it's a little bit complicated when it comes to that. They've been involved in low-intensity warfare along the border since the second day of the war. They've been shooting anti-tank missiles at both Israeli army places, but also towns and villages along the northern border, just almost destroying one of the towns completely because it's an accumulated basis. Their rockets mostly get intercepted, but the anti-tank missiles, which have like a 9 kilometers, so about a 5 or 6 mile range, are line of sight.
Mm-hmm.
And so think of it as a bazooka, but not a bazooka, obviously. And basically, it's line of sight, so it's pretty much instantaneous. It's not like a rocket that goes up in the air and comes down, and you have a chance to intercept. It's coming directly.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been pounding the settlements in the northern part of Israel since the beginning. They've all been evacuated, all the towns, villages, kibbutzim, have all been evacuated along the border. And they've increased that as a result of the assassination. 2 days ago, they had sent 60 missiles and rockets at an Air Force base that is it's an early warning station, and it's not an Air Force base for planes. It's a radar station and everything else. Because it's line of sight from the border, it's sitting on one of the highest mountains in the Galilee, but it's also only 3 or 4 kilometers from the Lebanese border. They were able to obviously attack it with these anti-tank missiles, and it created some damage to the radar system on the base. So that was a step up in terms of what they've done. A little while ago, it seems, we killed one of the leaders of the Hezbollah forces in southern Lebanon. So it's not quite clear where this is going. On one hand, there's talk of a negotiated settlement. The U.S. is trying to push for that. Israel would be happy with that, which basically amounts to Hezbollah moving behind the back to the Litani River, which they agreed to under UN resolution in the early 2026, I believe it was 2006, and they violated that ever since. But they would move back. In return, Israel would give Lebanon some really small pieces of land that's always been disputed who belongs to who. The UN actually ruled on Israel's side, but Israel really doesn't care that much if that would be what would happen. But the feeling also is that at some point there's going to be a war one way or the other. So some people think it's better now than later, but I'm one of those people who thinks later is better because we're still deep into Gaza. Our army is not set up in the way the American army is in terms of, you know, lengthy wars, logistic trains, and everything else that's necessary to maintain. We can, but it's not the best circumstances, let's put it that way. So I believe Israel will do all it can to delay any sort of war with Hezbollah, because we're not really ready. I mean, we can fight it, and we'd win it in the end because of the Air Force and everything else, but it's certainly suboptimal, to put it that way, to fight that war now. Additionally, there's been an additional terrorism in the West Bank in the last couple of days. That has gone up. And lastly, there's the question of the Houthis.
Yeah.
And the Houthis being this Yemenite group, Shiite group, that has been in a civil war in Yemen now for 20 years. And they've been firing missiles, and they've been trying to interdict ships. And they keep on trying. The U.S., together with Great Britain, France, and the 20 nations, has a fleet of ships trying to defend the waterways there with greater or lesser success. I mean, a couple of days ago, the Houthis tried to board a ship from these rubber motorized ships that came to try to get it. The ship called for assistance. One of the U.S. ships in the area sent helicopters. I think it was the Eisenhower sent helicopters to help them.
Yeah.
The Houthis, I no other way I can put it, were stupid and fired on the American armed helicopter.
Right.
And I believe the rules of engagement are pretty clear that if you're fired upon, you can fire back. And so they sunk three of the ships, and the fourth ship, I don't know if they're ships or boats, I guess they're boats, managed to get away.
So, Mark, are the Houthis, is that a nation, or is it a Yemen? I mean, is it a bunch of pirates?
Okay, so let me explain the Houthis. The Houthis are a subset of the people in Yemen. Yemen has been in a civil war for the last, I guess, almost 20 years, between the Houthis, who were not happy with the government in Sana'a. They actually marched on Sana'a, managed to capture Sana'a, the capital, but they're still the official government of Yemen, which is Sunni, and they're Shiite. I should even say there's been a civil war that went back to the 1960s between Sunnis and Shiites in Yemen. So it goes a long way back, but those weren't the Houthis. The Houthis were a particular clan that stepped forth, and then everything got named after them. And they get direct support from Iran, and they are very much an Iranian proxy. So everything they're doing is aimed at doing what Iran wants. And what Iran is doing is they're, of course, increasing the cost of shipping all over the world because many shipping companies have decided they don't want this problem. They're avoiding what's called the Bab al-Mandeb, which is where the Red Sea and the Indian Ocean meet. It's a strait, it's a pretty narrow passage, and that's the way you get to the Suez Canal.
Yeah.
And so about a 25% of world commerce moves through the Suez Canal. They're now instead going around the Horn of Africa. And that's a much lengthier voyage. It adds about 2 weeks of shipping time and, of course, the obvious increase in costs and everything else as a result of doing that.
So my question was really about, is this a nation attacking Israel?
Or, it is a nation. I mean, they control 60 or 70% of Yemen.
So, I mean, it seems to me it's probably not a very powerful organization to go in and just wipe them out, you know, just...
Well, let me just say the Saudis tried that for a number of years and didn't succeed. They tried that from the air. They tried supporting the other side in the Civil War who didn't get their act together. The only way to do that is for basically the United States to decide to go to war with the Houthis, including ground forces. And I don't think, you know, I don't see anyone lining up in the United States to say that's the best method.
No.
Obviously, maybe some airstrikes would work, etc., but I doubt. You know, we've learned throughout history that with the probable exception of the Balkans and the war in the Balkans where the United States and NATO intervened from the air, that was probably the only time in history that air power has alone won a war.
Yeah.
Every other time, air power is important, don't get me wrong, can't do without air power, but without putting boots on the ground somewhere, we've never succeeded in the United States or anyone else.
So interesting.
You know, ever succeeded. Do you think of World War II, for instance?
Yeah.
In the 3 months before the end of World War II, Germany was producing more arms than it had producing in the years previously. That's after how many years of bombing from the air, from the strategic bombers?
Right. Mark, you just need to take a little break right now. Can you stick around?
Absolutely, Bob.
All right, we're going to have more here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Are you looking to buy or sell a home? Make it a convenient and stress-free experience by calling the dynamic and trustworthy husband and wife team of Megan and Matt Chionis with Gulf Coast International Properties. Find out about their unique and complimentary post-closing concierge services not offered by other area agents. Matt and Megan Chionis give you the competitive advantage to command a premium price for your property. They personally attend all showings, create a marketing strategy for your property, and offer that complimentary concierge service to your potential buyer. This hands-on approach has helped them set several sales records in Pelican Bay and many at near-record prices. Megan and Matt Chionis understand that as an affluent buyer-seller, your needs and desires are unique. You deserve this level of service. Megan and Matt Chionis are passionate about the Naples lifestyle and they want you to enjoy it too. Call Megan and Matt Chionis with Gulf Coast International Properties at 239-269-5310. That's 239-269-5310. You have questions about your retirement? Ameriprise Private Wealth Advisor Jason Nardella with Nardella Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, can help. With the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach, you'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap to get you where you want to go. Call Nardella Financial Group today at 239-325-1041. That's 239-325-1041. Office is located at 9015 Stratistel Court, Suite 103, Naples, Florida. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by Gulf Shore Playhouse, changing lives through exceptional theater experiences. You can find out more and get some tickets to some great performances coming up. Just visit the website, gulfshoreplayhouse.org. Coming up, I'm going to visit with Jim McTague, former Barron's Washington Bureau Chief. Right now, we continue the conversation with Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's called HistoryCentral.com. Again, Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
So, Mark, I want to talk to you about some of the other things that are going around the globe, but any other comments about Israel and the Middle East?
One comment I would like to make, and that's, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, a peace plan, now's the time to make peace, which, you know, sometimes at the end of wars you do that. But I think people have to understand something. Israelis came to the conclusion after the events of October 7th, not that they didn't believe that, but they really understand how much they really do hate us and how much they're willing to do. And the belief that this goes beyond just the few fighters who did it. There was a phone call that was made by one of the fighters as he was killing a group of Israelis on one of the kibbutzim. Kibbutzim, mind you, who were the leaders of the peace movement in many ways. And he called his mother and told us about this wonderful thing he has done. He's been killing the Jews in the kibbutz. And she basically said, oh, wonderful, my son, wonderful. Let me speak to your father. He'll be thrilled.
Oh, my goodness.
And when Israelis heard that conversation, they realized that the situation is much worse than they thought. And as much as everyone wants peace, and I do believe the only solution ultimately is going to be a two-state solution, but it's not going to happen in my lifetime. So that's the feeling of amongst most Israelis, including people who would define themselves as leftists.
So, you know, the only thing I would say to that, though, Mark, is if a leader emerges who sees the world in a different way, they can capture the minds of the Palestinians, you know, it has to be a change of mindset. This is culturally, so deeply culturally embedded.
Well, that's the point. Problem. It's so deep. It is so, so deep that I don't think one leader can easily do it. I don't think it can be done in a generation. It requires more than a generation to do something like this. We're not talking, you know, the hatred. Look, if I was them, I'd hate us too. So it's not like, you know, well, they don't like us because we took, you know, 20 feet of their border, or even, you know, we're talking about a hatred that goes back now generations.
Right.
And so very, very difficult to get even a leader coming forth. It's going to be very, very difficult. I mean, I was pessimistic before this war. I'm even more pessimistic. And like I said, I believe the only solution is the two-state solution. But I'm hoping it takes place in my grandchildren's lifetime, because it's not going to happen in my lifetime.
Interesting.
That's my pessimistic view of this. So, anyway, let's move on to Ukraine for another optimistic point in light in the world. So, what's happened now is, to some extent, both sides have hunkered down for the winter. The Russians are engaged in a multiple missile campaign against the Ukraine. They've been sending dozens and dozens and dozens of missiles over the last couple of nights, aiming mostly at the power grid in Ukraine. They want to try to freeze the Ukrainians over the winter. So far, Ukraine has had enough anti-missile systems to knock down both the missile, a high percentage of the missiles, and as well as most of the drones that they're sending. So far, the Russians have not been successful. They have been causing deaths, obviously, and causing damage. But they're basically aiming at all the population centers at the moment, because they're unsuccessful, really, on the battlefield. So this is what's going to take place. I think most of the winter is going to be an attempt by the Russians to freeze the Ukrainians out. Now, the Ukrainians have been pretty successful in attacking now some of the rear areas of the Russians. A lot of the command and control centers, ammunition depots, all of those things, they've been very successful. And there also seem to be Ukrainian saboteurs really far behind the Russian lines that have also been relatively successful. None of this is going to determine the battle ultimately,
right?
But this is where it stands. Like I've said before, the Russians are just hoping that there's a different president of the United States who walks away from Ukraine. The Ukrainians are worried about that and trying to build deeper ties with the Europeans, who have made it clear they are going to stand by Ukraine regardless and are spending the money to do so right now. So that's where we stand right now in terms of Ukraine.
Well, thank you for that update. Also, Bangladesh, what's going on there?
Because Bangladesh had an election where the opposition boycotted, claimed it was an illegal election. The president of Bangladesh now has been reelected for the fourth time. You always have to worry when someone gets reelected four times in a row. Clearly, there's a strong opposition. There is threats of violence amongst the opposition, but the government is just waiting for violence on the opposition side, because they claim all the opposition are terrorists. So, you know, we live in a world where there really is too much violence. I mean, I don't know, it sounds kind of trite, but it really is that people are resorting to violence to settle political disputes.
Is that something new?
I don't know. You know, I think we lived in a world for a while we thought we were going in the other direction.
Right.
I think, and this is an overall statement that has nothing to do with American politics or any other politics.
Yeah.
10 years ago, I would have told you that the world was heading towards a period of greater harmony, that people's differences were less important, that
right.
technology was removing barriers, that we could talk to one another. You know, you and I are talking by phone right now, but we could easily be doing this by video without a question. It'd be 2 seconds, right? We'd both pick up our phones and we'd be having a video conference.
Right.
That all those things were bringing people in the world closer together, and realizing that the differences between us are not all that great. We're all humans. We all want our children's lives to be good. We want our own life to, you know, to live as long as we can, healthy as we can. And the difference between us, whether it's over religion or some version of politics, is not all that great. And I thought we were heading much more into towards that world 10 years ago, or, you know, somewhere in that area.
Yeah.
Something happened in the world 7, 8, 9 years ago. I can't even put my finger on the exact change. Maybe it was Putin coming to power and consolidating some more, the second rise of radical Islam with ISIS, the rise of so much of identity politics in the United States. Various things of that kind have developed.
Yeah.
Where we all look at what divides us more than what unites us.
So perhaps we're seeing the benefits of this instantaneous communication, but also maybe it's like dynamite. It could be used for good or bad. We're also seeing the downside. It exacerbates our differences and creates ill will.
Well, I think it clearly does. I think it does in two ways. Number one, you and I don't agree on certain political matters. We talk all the time, right?
Right.
Once a week we talk, at least, if not more, over email, etc.
Right.
But how many people on social media or in person at this point ever speak to someone who has a different view than they do?
Right.
I mean, in depth. I don't mean, you know, posting a terrible thing. But how many people discuss things in depth with people of different views? Instead, we get fed more and more, and that's done by social media because their algorithms feed us what we want to see, right?
Right.
So we get more and more of the same, even worse. In other words, YouTube has been known previously that if you see some sort of radical video, whether it's on the right or the left, it doesn't make a difference right now what side of the political spectrum, it then sends you more radical videos, and even further radical, because they see you like it, so they send you more of the same.
And they want clicks. Mark, you know, it's such a great conversation. I wish we had more time, but I need to move on to my next guest. But I just genuinely appreciate and enjoy our conversations and the information you're giving us. So thank you so much for joining us.
Have a great week, Bob, you and all your listeners.
Thank you so much, Mark. All right, coming up, we're going to visit with John Miltimore. John is the editor-at-large for fee.org. We're going to do that and more right here on the Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of the Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.